Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Mountain Mediation Executive Director Gretchen Lee and their new outreach coordinator, Lirio Sanchez. They'll be telling us about some of the work they're doing on landlord-tenant mediation, as well as the upcoming community conversations on reimagining our justice system. Then North Summit School District Superintendent Jerry Holmes will talk about returning to school next week, August 19th, and finally, Park City Education Foundation Executive Director Abby McNulty with details on preparing for a new school year and school registration. Stay tuned. Well, taking a look at some local news now, an attorney for the developers behind the proposed commercial project in Richardson Flat says the builders chose to pursue the town of Hideout's annexation of the property because their project stood little chance of approval if the land was controlled by Summit County. KPCW's Sean Higgins has details.
Hideout is a small town of under 1,000 residents on the northeast shore of the Jordanelle Reservoir in Wasatch County. Their town council voted on July 9th to begin the annexation process of 655 acres of land in Summit County, known as Richardson Flat, for use as a commercial development area. Nate Brockbank and Josh Romney, who is the son of Utah U.S. Senator Mitt Romney, are the developers involved with the proposal. The two hope to build a mixed-use development at Hideout called North Park, which includes 200,000 square feet of commercial area, 100,000 square feet of office space, and 3,500 residential units. A controversial piece of legislation known as House Bill 359 enabled Hideout to make this move. Allegations of misrepresentation by lobbyists during the legislative process have led lawmakers to reconsider House Bill 359 at the upcoming August special session of the Utah State Legislature. There is a chance House Bill 359 may be repealed. Tim Quinn represents Utah House District 54 at the state legislature and gave insight into the process that led to the passing of House Bill 359 in the closing days of the 2020 legislative session in March at Tuesday's meeting at Park's Edge. The Utah State Legislature is considered a part-time branch of government and holds an annual 45-day general session that begins on the fourth Monday of January. Additional special sessions of the legislature may be convened by the governor throughout the year to conduct additional business. Quinn told the crowd on Tuesday, due to the limited time available to get legislation passed during the general session, it is not unprecedented for bills to pass with minimal discussion, as was the case with Utah House Bill 359.
In a general session in the last two or three days, this sort of thing happens a lot. And I don't mean underhanded things. I meant the rapidity of which this happened and the fact that it didn't have a committee hearing, the fact that it didn't have much debate or discussion on the floor. That's just the way we do it in a very part-time legislature where we have, I think, 32 business days to transact the business of the state for that upcoming year.
Quinn was the lone no vote in the Utah House of Representatives on House Bill 359 and will be supporting a repeal of the legislation at the August special session. Brian Cooper is a Hideout resident and said at Tuesday's meeting that Hideout officials are willing to work with surrounding municipalities to solve the problems regarding projected growth around the Jordanelle Reservoir and the need for adequate services for the town and the surrounding communities. In response, Quinn said that if Hideout is serious about coming to the table, Hideout's town council should not move any further in the annexation process until after the August special session.
If they're willing to work with everyone to make this happen in a right and above board way, then have them hold off their vote until after the special session that the legislation is going into.
That's fine.
If they would do that, then yeah. I would believe that.
Summit County sued Hideout over the annexation move last Friday and was granted a temporary restraining order on Tuesday. A court hearing is scheduled for Monday, August 10th at 9 a.m. to determine whether the temporary restraining order against Hideout should be dissolved or converted to a preliminary injunction. Unless the order is dissolved, the annexation process cannot move forward until a repeal of House Bill 359 is voted on later this month. The Hideout Town Council will be holding official public hearings on the annexation on August 12th and August 18th, and depending on the outcome of August 10th's court hearing, could vote on the annexation issue before the Utah State Legislature is scheduled to convene on August 20th. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, the Mountain Mediation Center has hired a new outreach coordinator. On the phone with details, I have Executive Director Gretchen Lee, along with a new staff member, Lirio Sanchez. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Larry,
good morning.
Good morning. Gretchen, why don't you start here and just tell us, this brings your staff up to what, four full-time members?
No, we actually operate with a very part-time staff. I am part-time 20 to 25 hours. And then with the hiring of Lirio, and thanks to the great support of PCCF, we've been able to just very recently push her up to 15 to 20 hours a week. And then we rely really heavily on volunteers. And then we also have mediators that we do pay, you know, stipends to. So it's sort of a mixed bag of everything.
Okay. So between the four of you, maybe there's a full-time job there somewhere.
Exactly. Well, there's definitely more than full-time work, yeah.
Yeah. What's the mission, then, of Mountain Mediation?
So our mission is to help. We serve the residents of Wasatch and Summit counties, and our mission is to help those residents prevent and resolve conflicts. So we're all about conflict resolution outside of the courtroom. So our goal is to help people, you know, resolve their problems before it gets to the court.
Yeah. And then how busy have you been since things shut down in March because of the coronavirus?
Yeah, so when things shut down in March, our community mediation essentially, you know, stopped, not surprisingly stopped. But then the interesting thing with our small claims court, for years, we have been doing the mediations over at Small Claims Court at the Silver Summit Courthouse. The first and third Wednesdays of the month, we provide free mediation services for any civil claim under $11,000 is the amount in Utah. We provide mediation services there. So in March, the court did shut down there, but then they were seeing a backlog of cases. So then we started, we worked with them to go online with Zoom. So we have been doing Zoom mediations at Small Claims Court since mid-May. And about a month or so ago, our calls started increasing again for family mediations.
So you've just hired, as we mentioned, Lirio as your new outreach coordinator to do what specifically?
Yeah, so we have seen a need. We want to be reaching out to the Latino Spanish-speaking community, and we really were not able to do that very efficiently without a Spanish speaker. And Lirio, I'd love you to hop on here and tell us a little bit about yourself. She's grown up in Park City. She's embedded in the community. And this is going to be a real asset to us to, you know, make aware of, you know, folks in that community of our services and how we're here to assist them.
Okay.
Lirio, do you want to jump in on that?
You know what? It looks like she's not there any longer, so I'm sorry. I don't know.
Oh,
she's
no.
Just dropped off. Here she comes again. Okay, there she is. Larry, can you hear us now?
Yes, sorry. I got dropped. But
yeah. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing here at Mountain Mediation.
Yeah, so my name is Lirio Sanchez, and like Gretchen mentioned, I grew up here in Park City. I graduated from Park City High in 2015 and just finished my accounting degree up at the U. But my community, and especially helping my Latino community, has always been really important. So I was really excited about this position. And as I got to learn more about Mountain Mediation and the services that they provide, I felt like this was something that could be very beneficial for the Spanish-speaking community. So one of the events that we're going to do actually coming up August 22nd is we're going to have a Spanish-speaking community conversation about reimagining the justice system and restorative justice, and kind of bringing more awareness to that topic to our community and seeing what the needs are, and just bringing more awareness and reaching that community.
All right. So this is happening when and where?
Yeah, so this is August 22nd. It's going to be from 10:30 a.m. to noon, and it's going to be on the Mountain Mediation Center Facebook Live page. We're going to have a panel and discussing restorative justice and hopefully getting some community engagement with questions and comments as we're doing that.
So tell me about some of the panelists that you're bringing on.
Yeah, so we have two. We have Ciriac Alvarez and Susana Monteca. And Ciriac worked for Voices for Utah Children. She's a policy analyst there, and she kind of focuses on the youth, school, and family for restorative justice. And then Susana, she's a counselor at East High School, and she works on restorative justice prevention and kind of the different approaches that they have implemented in the schools, and also focuses on the inequalities and how minorities are impacted in the justice system and in the schools and how they interlink.
Okay, so how are you getting the word? It's all going to be held in Spanish. How are you getting the word out?
Yeah, so we're going to use our social media page and all the other groups like PCCF, and I'm going to be hanging up flyers in the apartment complexes and just spreading the word that way.
All right. Gretchen, back to you just for a minute. In terms of the status, the moratorium on evictions, that it ended here statewide in May. What are you seeing as a result of this?
Yeah, so right now, I think our community has done an incredible job about coming together between the Christian Center, Jewish Family Services, PCCF, really to help people with rent assistance. We are not, so far, knock on wood, seeing, you know, the evictions yet in over at Third District Courthouse. The state moratorium expired in May, and then the federal one just expired at the end of July. But the landlords have to wait 30 days before they can go ahead and file an eviction, so that puts us more towards the end of August. So that's probably why we haven't seen much movement yet. So we don't know really what's going to happen, but in the meantime, we've been preparing we've got a small group of small claims court mediators who are interested in landlord-tenant mediation, and some of them have real estate backgrounds. And so we as an organization have started some roundtables with them, you know, just to make sure that they're up and running if and when we're called upon at the court to help mediate those cases.
So at this point, it's not much of a problem, but you expect it could be?
Yeah, we have not seen, at the court level, we have not seen it.
Yeah. So how can you...
But, yeah, who knows? I'm sorry.
How can you help, though? I mean, certainly landlords have mortgages to pay themselves.
Yeah, so exactly. And so what we're offering... and you can go on our website, probably the best place to look at it. But we can help landlords, particularly smaller landlords that deal with tenants more on a one-on-one basis, help renegotiate leases with their tenants. So, you know, their workable leases on both sides, recognizing that the landlords have, you know, bills to pay and perhaps the tenants aren't in a position to pay their full leases. So if you go on our website, which is Mount Mediation Center.com, you can see we have like an initial, the Utah Apartment Complex Association has a basic form that can help, you know, landlords and tenants get started if they want to, you know, get to the table. And then if they have problems from there, we have got mediators ready to go. And thanks to some funding from our other community organizations, like, we are able to do this at no charge.
Ah, okay. Well, it's interesting. I saw some statistics on this. Most Utahns who face eviction lawsuits have no legal representation, while the vast majority of the property owners, the landlords, more than 90% of them do have attorneys. So it's not really a fair fight, right?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It is, and, you know, you put that on top of the laws are stacked against the tenants in Utah. So, it's not really a fair fight. So it is another, you know, reason why, you know, it could be beneficial to get the landlords and the tenants, you know, at the table before they get to the courthouse.
Yeah, yeah. And, Liria, are you hearing about any possible evictions?
As of now, no, we haven't received any inquiries about eviction on the Spanish-speaking side or really just the community in general. But I know there's a lot of work that they've been talking to the owners of the big apartment complexes to ensure there's no evictions and working with them. And I know that there's been a lot of help provided to the community as well to help with paying rent.
Yeah. Okay, Gretchen and Luria, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so, other than just our upcoming August 22nd community conversation. So go to our website, and hopefully the Spanish-speaking community will enjoy and participate in that. And then we are going to be doing a follow-up conversation, same topic matter, reimagining our justice system, bilingual in September, but we'll have more details on that later.
All right. Appreciate your time, Gretchen, Luria. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the three newest inductees to the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame all have roots in the Park City area and Wasatch Back. In fact, as KPCW Rick Bruff reports, one of the honorees used to manage KPCW.
In a press release issued Thursday, the Alf Engen Ski Museum Foundation announced that it is honoring Randy Montgomery and Howard Peterson, both deceased, as well as veteran TV journalist and former KPCW general manager Larry Warren. The press statement notes that Montgomery held marketing positions at the Park City Ski Resort and Snowbird, was the executive director of Ski Utah, and directed the Utah Sports Authority, which built $59 million in sport facilities in preparation for the 2002 Winter Olympics. When Montgomery died in 1999 in a motorcycle accident, he was working for the Salt Lake Organizing Committee and was executive director for the Alf Engen Ski Museum Foundation. Howard Peterson, who died this May, was a major figure behind the development of the Soldier Hollow cross-country Olympic venue near Midway. He developed the Soldier Hollow Foundation and Charter School and raised $1 million for a day lodge at the site. Before that, Peterson moved the U.S. Ski Association to Utah so athletes could be closer to training and competition venues. He encouraged the U.S. Olympic Committee to consider a bid city that would commit to sustaining Olympic legacy facilities after it hosted the Games, a stance that led to Salt Lake winning the U.S. bid in 1989. And Larry Warren's over four-decade career as a journalist includes 27 years at KUTV in Salt Lake and 7 years managing KPCW. His resume also includes books on the history of skiing and Park City, voiceovers for video and film productions, and the 1995 Excellence in Skiing Journalism Award from Ski Utah. Unfortunately, an induction dinner and awards ceremony for the honorees has been postponed due to the pandemic, but Ski Museum Executive Director Connie Nelson said plaques for the trio will be installed in the Engen Museum in September. The ceremony will be scheduled at a later date. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Republic Services, a proud supporter of KPCW, provides an essential service to our communities. We're working to keep our collection routes running smoothly and our communities clean. We are here today and in the months ahead, and will continue to do what we can for all Summit County Recycling and Waste Disposal Services. Learn more at summitcountyrecycles.org.
Well, following legal conflicts over the past 2 years, the private Summit Water Company is underway with a new board of directors. They also have a new manager who's been on the job for just a week or two. A ruling earlier this year from Third District Court called on the company to hold a meeting in July where the firm's A and B shareholders voted to elect 4 out of the 6 members of the board. Brody Saunders received the most shareholder votes, elected to a 6-year term. Also elected were Kathleen Veneman, Dr. David Teasley, and Elliot Christensen. The two holdover members of the board are Stuart Knowles and B. Pack. Shortly after that, the company reported that General Manager Andy Garland had resigned. He was replaced by Jeremy Sorensen. Sorensen told KPCW that the board named Brody Saunders as the company's president and Stuart Knowles to the position of secretary. They are the sons, respectively, of the original company founders, Hy Saunders and Larry Knowles. In a recent interview with KPCW, Sorensen told us a little bit about his background.
I am from Spanish Fork, Utah, born and raised, and I still live down there. For the last 15 years, I have worked for Strawberry Water Users Association, and I was their general manager as well. A new opportunity came, and here I am, and I'm excited to be up here.
Meanwhile, two lawsuits filed in 2018 are still pending in court. In one, Summit Water's previous board and company management sued the original founders. The Saunders and Knowles party filed a separate lawsuit in return. One of the lawsuits also has a third-party claim and cross-claims filed by Property Reserve, Inc., a firm tied to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Well, the waterline project along Kearns Boulevard will continue into October, causing traffic backups and disruptions. Additionally, this week, an overnight street closure is scheduled, which will divert traffic on Kearns Boulevard for about a seven-hour period. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
The two-year water pipeline project is part of a larger $110 million water supply and water quality project, which has been underway for at least 5 years. It is replacing old lines from the early 1980s and will extend the pipeline from Rockport Reservoir to the new Three Kings Water Treatment Plant. The new water line is expected to last 100 years. Park City Utilities Director Clint McAfee says they're trying to keep as much water service at capacity as they can while replacing infrastructure.
And before this, a lot of listeners may have noticed the Quinns Water Treatment Plant also under construction. We've been making improvements to that over the last year to increase capacity and reliability, continue to provide water while Three Kings Water Treatment Plant is being constructed. Because we are down for two sources, Judge Tunnel and Spiro Tunnel, during the construction of that.
The pipeline construction will continue into next year when they will replace the lines across SR 224 and connect with the new Three Kings treatment plant. In 2013, the city decided to discontinue using water from the Judge Tunnel due to quality concerns. McAfee says the Utah Division of Water Quality has ordered the city to meet stream water quality standards for both Judge and Spiro water sources by 2024. Many homeowners along the rail trail have enjoyed the backyard feature of having water that flows through Poison Creek. McAfee says that will end in 2023 when both those water sources are scheduled to go through the new Three Kings treatment plant.
And so between 2013 and until we start using it in 2023, that water has just been discharged into the creek. So not only water quality concerns from a drinking water standpoint, there's also water quality concerns from a stream water standpoint. So it does not meet water quality standards for stream discharge. And the same story with the Spiro. The Three Kings Water Treatment Plant is driven by the Clean Water Act. The plan for Judge is to pipe it from Judge down to the new treatment plant at Three Kings and treat it for drinking water and pump it into our system. Once we do that, the stream would return to what it was prior to 2013.
Park City Public Utilities engineer Griffin Lloyd says Wednesday night, August 12th, they'll close Kearns at Bonanza Drive eastbound and detour traffic through the Prospector neighborhood.
As part of us connecting to the old system, we need to run a water line from the south side of the intersection at Bonanza up Monitor to where our Boot Hill lines are. So in order to cross Kearns, we felt it was less traffic impact if we were to do a nightly closure and do it in about 4 or 5 hours versus trying to switch traffic around us, and it probably taken 2 days. So we're planning on closing the road at 8 p.m. We should have it open back up by about 3 a.m. Wednesday night.
Traffic backing up on Kearns due to the pipeline construction is being addressed by UDOT, making signaling adjustments to manage vehicle volume. The signal on Kearns at Comstock will also be repaired in the coming days. That line was damaged and it's caused very long waits for those making left-hand turns off of Comstock on to 248. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Support for KPCW comes from Esko Heating, AC, Plumbing, and Electrical. Now is a good time to get your air conditioning unit tuned up and ready for summer. More information at 855-ESCO-NOW or escoutah.com. That's ESCO. ESCO.
It's 8:36. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone with an update for the start of school, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Education Foundation, Abby McNulty. Good morning, Abby.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Can we first just get an update on the Emergency Teacher Grant? Is that program still running?
Yeah, it is running. Obviously, it's taken a hiatus over the summer because our teachers have been on a well-deserved vacation. But the emergency express grants will be available for teachers as they come back to school. And that's to support unanticipated, unexpected needs for either in-classroom learning or remote learning.
All right. So where's the funding for that coming from?
The funding for that comes from the fundraising that we do on an annual basis. We raise money from our parents and from our community members to allow us to be adaptive and nimble and flexible, especially in these times, to support what we know will be likely will be some unanticipated needs this year. And so we do our fundraising through our back-to-school parent appeal campaign, which is happening now. If parents have registered, they will see the Park City Education Foundation appeal when they're registering, and they'll also see flyers as their kids come back to in-classroom learning.
Okay. That registration had to happen as of Friday, is my understanding. So did you hear from some folks?
Yeah. So I think registration is actually still ongoing. Mm-hmm. What parents were supposed to do by Friday was elect whether they wanted to do in-person, remote, or remote learning, or speak with a counselor to plan a return that works for an individual student and their family. So registration, I know the school district would like all families to register. So that's a different step than electing how you want to go to school this fall.
Sure. And what's how is it that they do? They just do this online?
Yeah. So if you go, Park City School District's website is populated with new information every day. It's a great resource for parents in the school district to go and access all the information they need, especially this year, as there's so many, you know, things changing and so much unknown with COVID-19. So you can go to pcschools.us, and there's a registration button right on the front of the website.
Yeah. What are you hearing?
About?
Just in terms of the registration numbers.
Oh, you know, I don't know. That's a question that I'm not familiar with the answer to. You know, every year, I think new families move into Park City School District, and we actually don't get the official tally until October, I believe, when they take the state does a count on October 1 of how many students are in the classroom. So I don't know. Yeah. I see on Facebook, you know, it looks like there's a lot of new families moving to town, but that's not a real measure of anything.
Sure. And then your two largest fundraisers, Running With Ed and the Red Apple Gala, both kind of done virtually this year. How did Running With Ed turn out for you?
Yeah, it was great. You know, we're very lucky to have had so many sponsors stick with us, even though we did not have an event this past May that we had to cancel. And, you know, we know that just the economics of it all, too, made it for a very uncertain spring. The Ed Foundation did great. We were very generously supported by the community to support things like our emergency express grants. So we did well with, even though we didn't have a real Running With Ed, people did continue to give to the program. And also people who signed up to run, many of them allowed us to keep their registration donation as opposed to asking for the funds back, which was very helpful for us in terms of continuing to be able to invest in programs this coming year, this school year. That was great. Red Apple Gala. We won't be hosting it as we have in the past. We were slated to host it September 26th at the Montage Deer Valley. But obviously we can't do a gathering of 300 people indoors. So we are doing a small event outside, still at the Montage Deer Valley. And it's just It will be August 29th, and there's information on our website at pcf4kids.org if anyone is interested to see how we've reimagined the Red Apple Gala.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just, good luck to everyone as they make their decisions about how kids are going to go back to school this year. School starts on August 20th, and we appreciate in advance everyone who plans to make a contribution to the Education Foundation. We know this year we'll have some unanticipated needs, and we look forward to, being able to meet those needs as best we can.
Okay, Abby, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
Abby McNulty is the Executive Director of the Park City Education Foundation. Well, the North Summit School District reopens its schools next week, Wednesday, August 19th. On the phone to give us an idea of how they plan to do that successfully and what it will look like, I have the superintendent of the North Summit School District, Jerry Holmes. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for being with us. Certainly, some school districts have asked that the Utah Board of Education require stricter precautions against the coronavirus. The board voting last week 9-5 against a series of mandates. Are you okay with the rules that are in place for the return of school?
Well, our motto has been we'll do whatever we have to do to get kids back in school, and that's pretty much what we're following. I know that there's some debate on this or that, but we've really kept in touch with the health department in our county. Rich Bolo and others have been great to work with us, and we're just willing to whatever the requirements are, we'll do to get kids in front of teachers.
Yeah. So what does the schedule look like? Is every kid coming back, or do they have an option?
They do have an option. We will do remote learning for those who choose that, and we've got different situations. Some who maybe have someone in the family who is compromised, and so they don't feel like sending their children is a good idea, and we will remotely teach them. We purchased cameras for all of our classrooms, and our hope is to be able to teach those students at home as it happens in the classroom, and if that will work, it will be certainly less work for the teachers. Our concern initially was that they'll be teaching the kids in their class, and then we've got to worry about at home. But so we're going to try to make that happen simultaneously, and so we have a few kids in each of our three schools that are choosing that, but for the most part, kids are coming back, and August 19th we're going to start and see how it works out.
All right, and then those that are choosing the remote learning, they've got the computer and I guess, as importantly, is the internet service, huh?
Yes, and that's part of their decision. Last spring, All West, our local provider, was so generous in providing that for our families who didn't have it, and they did that for free. And we will have to cross that bridge when we get there. Right now, those who are choosing to do it remotely are equipped, and we'll provide the device, obviously, and it will be a case-by-case basis, but we're committed to make it work.
All right. And then inside the classroom, do you guys have the room to maintain the recommended social distancing? Have you figured that out?
Well, we've asked teachers to remove all of the non-essential things from their classrooms. As you can only imagine, teachers have a lot of things that they've accumulated over the years, and so we've asked them to get rid of a lot of that. And so we're doing our very best to I don't think there's a classroom in most schools that they'll be able to create the 6 feet. But initially, from the early onset of this, even before the governor's mandate, it was the recommended 6 feet or whatever is reasonable. And we're trying to do our best with making that as wide a gap as we possibly can, but we can't guarantee 6 feet now.
Yeah. So what are the recommendations from the health department? Have they been kind of through the classrooms to look? Or?
You know, actually, they're coming at 10 o'clock this morning, the health department is, and we're going to do a walkthrough, and they'll see what we're attempting to do. And then I'm sure they might have some other recommendations or even requirements, and we're happy to collaborate with them, and they're the experts, and we will hopefully be able to satisfy what they think is a safe return.
Yeah. What are some of the other precautions you're taking to keep your students and staff safe?
Well, we obviously are requiring the face covering, and we're using the definition that the governor and also our county commissioners have deemed as a face covering, and so we're obviously requiring that. We are offering our teachers whatever PPE they feel like they need. We'll be putting some plexiglass up and providing gloves, masks, shields, whatever they feel like they need. And we will accommodate students as well. At this point, we haven't had any special requests that we haven't been able to accommodate. So, you know, and I realize that the closer we get to the opening, we may have some more, and we'll scramble to do our best to make sure that happens. Our school is small enough that we've never really had two lunches like most bigger schools do. We're going to have two lunches in our high school. We're not going to have large assemblies. We're trying to just cut back on those things that might create a more contact than is necessary. But really, we're honestly, our hope is that we can make this as normal as possible. We know that this isn't the old normal, but we want our students to be able to still have an experience, and that's what we're trying to do, and balancing that with safety.
Yeah. And then the kind of the back and forth just with regard to what needs to happen if somebody, staff member or student, should come down with the virus, they are now required to quarantine?
Yes, yes. And I think that's what maybe one of the things you were alluding to with the state board. There was some question on the definition of essential, and if parents saw that a student didn't have symptoms after 3 days, they could, with permission, bring them back, and the same with a teacher, but that didn't last very long, and so we're back to the 14-day quarantine, and that's what we're going to have to do, and I know for some it will be an easy move. For those who don't agree, even in the first place, with having to wear a mask, that's going to be a real struggle to have to call them and say, your child was potentially exposed, so therefore we're going to have him or her stay home for 14 days. That's going to be a tough conversation, but the part that we understand is that as long as we work in collaboration with our health department, with the state, we're not out on an island. We're doing what everybody else is doing, and it's all an attempt to make this work. And again, that's our theme, is we'll do what we have to do to make this work.
All right. And I guess the student would have to have the device and the service in order to stay
yes.
on top of things. Yeah. Yeah.
That becomes a real, you know, I mentioned earlier that we haven't had any requests that we haven't been able to accommodate, but when we start sending kids home through the quarantine process, that's one of the things we will have to make sure of, is that we can help them with the internet service.
Yeah. How are the teachers with all of this? I mean, do you have them all coming back?
We do. And we have differing opinions. Certainly, we don't have any teachers that are not coming back because of this. We've had a couple of our paraprofessionals who have decided that it's not worth it for them to come back. And we respect that, obviously. But as of now, all of our teachers will be coming back, and each of them has some different requests as far as our accommodations. But we're grateful that they're coming back, and we hope that we can keep them safe in all of this.
All right. Let's see. I haven't seen a notice for a truth and taxation hearing. Did you need to hold one this year?
No. We haven't done a truth and taxation for as long as I've been the superintendent, and I was the principal before that. I don't remember the last time North Summit did a truth and taxation.
Yeah, so new growth is helping then?
We have had some new growth, and I wouldn't say growth in student population as much as just new homes going up, new properties has helped us. But we just aren't, especially in the pandemic, we just don't feel like now would be a good time to raise taxes in any way.
Yeah. What about raises for your teachers and staff? Were you able to give them something for the school year?
We were able to give steps and lanes and a 2%, which it was a great negotiations this year. I think our teachers and other staff realized that with what's going on, I think in a lot of cases they weren't expecting anything, hoping to get steps and lanes and to maintain their insurance. But because of our property tax, not the rate increase, but the revenue increase, we were able to, even with the cuts from the state, we were able to do 2%.
Great. What's the starting salary then for North Summit teachers?
I'm gonna say right at $44,000.
Okay. There's a big effort, I know, by other districts to try and get that up to 50. I mean, is that something that you...
Well, we're blaming our good friends from Park City for that. They started that a couple years ago, and so they set that bar pretty high, and I think that there certainly is. I think Wasatch just did that. So, yeah, that will be our next pressure point, I'm sure. But we do offer one of the best insurance packages in the state. Our teachers don't have to supplement and pay for that out of their pocket. And our at this point, they have been wanting to hang on to that part. So I think you have to consider the whole package and not just what the starting salary is.
All right. So what do your preliminary enrollment numbers look like? Are you seeing some growth?
Not necessarily, and we won't know for sure until October 1st, but we have had some move in, but not in a kind of way that anyone would consider real growth. Our class sizes, as far as a class, is averaging around 75, and that hasn't gone up much, and in some cases, in our lower grades, it's lower than that. So we did a growth study a year ago, and it looked pretty stagnant as far as numbers coming in. But it just seems like when we have some families move, they get replaced by families moving in, and we've stayed pretty close to our same number. Our whole district is just over 1,000.
All right, well, let's talk quickly about fall sports. What does that look like? We got the football team and golf teams practicing? Or?
Yeah, we do. And like everyone else, we're trying to do it safely. And, in fact, our first football game is this Friday night. And that I'm sure that will be part of our visit with the health department this morning as far as with our football stadium, how can we best manage that? Obviously, we're going to require masks for our spectators, and we're also going to follow the county's lead on even our players and coaches on the sideline will have a face covering of some kind. And the new rules for this year only, I'm sure, are allowing teams to line up instead of from the 25-yard line to the 25. They're letting us extend from the 10-yard line to the 10, which will allow us to separate those kids. Because really, if you consider the when they trace for contact tracing, they're looking for when they've been in close contact for 15 minutes. Well, the kids on the sideline would be more prone to that 15 minutes or longer. So we want to keep them separated the best we can, and with the face covering. So we're starting, and we hope we can keep it going, and we will be in contact with the health department after each game to assess, well, this is what we saw. What we hope we don't see is a lot of our spectators who refuse to wear a mask, so that we have to not have spectators. We want our, I think parents ought to be able to watch their kids play, and yet we've all got to make some sacrifices to make that happen. So as of now, we're moving forward, but we will assess after each contest.
Okay. Finally, wanted to ask you, the name of the high school team, of course, the Braves, and we have seen recently that the Native American symbols and names are changing on a national level. Any talk about you changing the names here?
No talk whatsoever. We feel like and we've had a lot of Native American groups and tribes come to our homecoming assemblies. We had a 100-year celebration a few years ago and involved them. And at this point, I think they feel like we have honored them. The name has not been offensive to them. I realize that other nicknames have been offensive to many, but at this point, certainly no move that way, because we feel like we are honoring rather than mocking.
Okay. Jerry, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm just hoping the best for us and the districts around us. I hope we can make this work and everybody will have a successful and safe school year.
Yeah, we all do. Hey, thanks so much for your time, Jerry.
Thank you.
Jerry Holmes is the superintendent of the North Summit School District. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW, News Time 859.